Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody out there today in radio land, podcast land, computer land, however you are listening to us. We are live today. I am your host, Karen Allen, for Focus on Women magazine. This is La Femme de Prose, and I am talking to someone on the other coast. I am in the Washington, D.C. metro area, and she's on the other side of the entire country. Julia Dye is her name, and she has a thing for military stories. Her dad and her husband are both military men, and she writes this book that we're talking about today. She's written other books, too, from an important perspective. I think this perspective is finally starting to get the attention it has long deserved, that of not just the soldier, but his or her entire family. Because the soldier's comings, goings, and actual service have a lot of bearing on the health and well-being of the family. As it is, I think, in this country, we haven't focused enough on veterans and their service, you know, starting way back. And it was bad during Vietnam. It's better now. Julia, this is such a great niche. Thank you for joining us, first of all. What possessed you to write this category and this niche? I mean, I know you have experience in your life with soldiers, but a lot of people do that. Why write about it like this?
Well, I think that what it means to be human is to tell stories. And we do that in a way to provide meaning to our experiences. And war has affected so many people, and service has affected so many people, that I think we forget how many people are actually affected by this issue.
I think you're absolutely right. And I think that Mrs. Obama focused a lot more on veterans and veterans' families, but you've been writing since for a while, and this is not your first book with a military perspective. This book is called Through My Daughter's Eyes, and I read every page, and I really was quite wrecked because it's from the perspective of a young girl and how her father's service affects her family. Julia, you take it from there. Tell me about this book, and how do you know about this girl's life?
Well,
that you know fiction, but how do you know?
Well, you know, as I said, there's a lot more people are affected by this issue than we think. You know, there's about 2 million children that have at least one parent serving in the military, and it climbs exponentially if you add in other first responder parents and children of veterans like me. Even if you don't think you've been affected by this, do you have a parent? Do you have a grandparent? Do you have an uncle? Do you have an aunt who served? There are so many ways in which our family experience has been affected by this. And my father served in World War II. He didn't talk about it much. So I didn't realize how it affected how he held our family together until much later in life. So I was really interested in this. My father was the most amazing man I've ever met. He's my absolute hero. Unfortunately, he's passed. But he didn't talk about this. So this huge seminal experience that had so much to do with who he was as a man, I couldn't get in touch with until later when I was able to talk about these subjects with him. And some of that was because I was approaching this from a literary standpoint. So I do think that more of us need to understand this because it is part of our family experience, whether we know it or not.
That's very, very interesting, and you're absolutely right. We do see soldiers that are on leave or just, you know, stationed around here all the time, at least in the Washington, D.C. area. And I think that you're giving this much-needed attention that, as I said in the introduction, I don't think that we've put enough attention and focus there. Do you agree with that?
I think so. I mean, I think it's changing. I think we do talk about it more than we used to. And this is not new. It's not even since Vietnam. You know, World War I soldiers marched on Washington because they weren't getting pensions that they deserved. Civil War soldiers, if you're a veteran of the South, are you still a veteran? You don't want to talk about it in the same way as if you're on the winning side. There's so many different pieces of it. And even if it's not you, if it's your congressman, it's going to affect you. If it's your teacher, if it's I have Dale's, my husband's daughter married a Marine, so So it's our family going down. It's all over. So it does matter. And, you know, war is such a fun thing to talk about. I hate to put it like that, but it's such a crucible of human experience. So in storytelling, we like the dramatic. We like the difficult. But love, hatred, bravery, courage, cowardice, those are all things that affect us whether we're, you know, in a war zone or not.
Very true. Tell me about what goes on in this book, this young lady with two
sure.
parents whose family sort of goes off the rails a little bit.
It does, and, you know, a lot of families
you know
do. We all have challenges. Mm-hmm.
You could read a little from your book, and that will give people an idea also of your great writing.
Oh, well, thank you. Well, this ties into what I'm talking about, storytelling. And this is from the point of view of Abby. She's the narrator of the story, and she is in middle school. So she is trying to explain what it's like when you're hearing about these stories, because combat veterans don't come back and share all their gruesome details, because they don't want to relive it either. So this is just a little piece about that. When combat veterans come home, they tell stories. They tell those stories to each other, maybe not even realizing that children are listening. These stories don't sound real. They sound like a baseball highlight reel. Here are the amazing heroic catches. Here's the home run I hit. Here's the blooper you made. There's little or nothing of the time in between, standing on deck, striking out, waiting on base for someone else's at bat, or even waiting around for the other team to show up. Remember, you can't have a war if the other team doesn't fight back. The player and the soldier, though, they both have the same goal, safe at home. So that's part of what I want to say about the universality of this, about the things we go through and how we share them with each other, and how we use storytelling to make sense of things that are senseless. If there is something that has a beginning, a middle, and a happily ever after, it has meaning to the meaningless. So it's almost impossible to go through something traumatic and come out the other side with a working brain unless you can find some sort of meaning to it all. Right?
Right. Yeah. In reading how you were able to get into the emotions, the head and the heart and the soul of your middle schooler here, Abby, was really rang incredibly true to me. I know that
oh,
I've been
thank
there
you.
And long gone, but it still felt like, hey, I know exactly. I mean, and I have, you know, teenagers and young adults, and so this
mm-hmm.
is not so far from anybody's life. I felt like that was anybody could identify with that, and I actually see that on, you know, you have wonderful reviews on Amazon where they really think you nailed it. I think that's incredible,
yeah.
And also good writing. And I know you have more of it. One thing is interesting is, you know, the soldier to the family's relationship and the family to the soldier's relationship, and how
mm-hmm.
I think you made it clear the space there and the gaps that needed to be filled. Can you talk about that a little? Because maybe others who are listening today can actually use some of this, you know, to make it better for themselves and their families.
Sure. See if I can understand what you're asking me. So the gap, of course, when anybody in the family is going to leave the family for a while and have an experience that's foreign to the rest of them, and it goes both ways. It's not just her father goes to war and she and her mother are at home, but they also have experiences that he's not a part of. So when he comes back, they've already made arrangements to do the chores for who has responsibility over what, of how they're going to interact with each other, that he's not a part of. So it can be exclusionary. So how do you rebuild that and bring the people back together to fill the needs that are not being met? And one of the ways in which they're able to come through some of it is through the mother's father, her grandfather, who had served in Vietnam but hadn't talked about it much. And he remembered his issues coming home and was able to help guide the rest of the family through some of their difficulties. And I think that idea of an extended family, idea of her teachers, her school counselors who are involved in the process, the village, as it were, of people who come together to help them all find their way to the next step. I'm not going to say something like healing or completion because that's a storytelling thing. We want it to wrap up nicely, and families don't do that. We have good times and bad, and you all learn and grow on your own journeys. But there's more influences than just the immediate family. So I think all of those pieces come into play. Do teachers know about this? If you have a student whose family is going through this, would you know what to do or say or how to listen? If you are a clergy person, if you're someone who's in contact with families, do we all know what they want to talk, what they don't want to, how to just listen and to be there for each other? And that's something we all can do for each other. We can all give that gift.
All of those methods that you described, you know, teachers, counselors, clergy, friends, family, it is, and extended family, as you say, excellent that you are able to bring all that in the book and really show people a really good example of how people could help each other when the family's, you know, is breaking down. I thought that was super helpful to people. And because it's not a shame to get counseling anymore like it used to be, and it should never have been. And now it is so important for people to do that and get help, and because especially the soldiers with PTSD survive and function on a regular basis, just being back and dealing with
sure. And I want to jump in on one thing you said, just because it's something that I feel pretty strongly about, which is PTSD. And the reason that I say that is because it's post-traumatic stress disorder. And I think we need to drop that last word. Why is it a disorder to be confused after going through an insane experience like combat? If you didn't have trouble adjusting, I would think that would be a disorder in and of itself. I think it's just post-traumatic stress. We don't have to make it into a disease. We should recognize that that's a normal process and help each other through that. And I do think counseling is a wonderful way of doing that, but not everyone is going to respond to a scientific clinical experience. Some people need it to be clergy. Some people need it to be different methods of getting to a place of confidence and comfort. And all of those options should be available and equally legitimate because we're all on our own journeys.
Mm-hmm. Excellent insights, really. You're right about PTS. You're absolutely right about that.
And it's funny, we pick up these acronyms, you know, and that has changed throughout the years, too. That's always been a thing. It was shell shock, or it was battle fatigue, or, you know, each war seems to have its own term for that process.
Yeah.
So we know it exists, or we wouldn't have had those words going back so far. But this is the first time, I think, that we've tried to make it diseased. And I'm not sure that that's helpful there's something wrong with you because you can't cope.
Right. But it works at least because it's a diagnostic disorder. You can actually get insurance coverage. So that's the
right.
Only reason.
And that's part of that's
possibly helpful.
Right. And that's huge. And so having insurance coverage, pharmaceutical coverage, if it's needed, those things, that's terrific. But let's use that term diagnostically where it's appropriate without it being something on the person that you are at fault. You're broken. Instead thinking that this is a normal process and you have to go through this thing, this period of time, which is normal. And maybe that's just a terminology thing that we have to think about, or in how we're presenting it to the veterans that are coming back or the currently serving soldiers, in a way of that's, even if we use the same term, in a way that isn't them feeling like they're at fault, that they did something wrong, they're disordered. That's all. So it's just, then it also
very
says,
yeah.
You know, here's a process, and here are some steps you can take, and here are some choices you can make that will help you. And don't do it just yourself. Your whole family is going to go through the same process. in different ways from different approaches, but they're going to need help too. You know, they're needing help when you're gone and you need help when you're coming back.
Yeah, you have
so this
PhD.
Is just a way, and looking at it from the point of view of the daughter was really interesting, and you touched upon her a bit, and so did I. And what was fun for me as a writer was coming up with the concept and thinking about this and trying to put the story together. She took over. There were times I was having her do something or say something, she's like, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to do this. So
that
she surprised me.
That's so cool.
It was fun, and I was sad to see her go. I mean, like, I wanted her to send me letters once in a while and let me know how it's going.
That's adorable. It's amazing when I hear writers say that the character made the decisions for them. I cannot imagine that because I'm not a good writer, but that is such an interesting thing, and I'm happy to hear it because that, you know, just shows your passion for the subject and your involvement in it. I was mentioning that you have a PhD, and you're also Vice President and CFO of Warriors, Inc. Now, I understand that that is a military advising company. So you really are military, you know, oriented. What does that mean? What does your company do?
Okay, Warriors, Inc. is a military advising company for the entertainment business. And we, it's back to the same thing of telling stories and trying to get the emotional truth of those stories out. So the company was founded by my husband, Captain Dale Dye, and he's a retired Marine, and he is an actor and advisor to film and television. So we've worked on projects like Band of Brothers, Saving Private Ryan. He started out with Platoon. So
wow.
We do our best to tell amazing stories. And he founded this company. He's a Vietnam veteran and served longer. Served in Beirut as well. And when he retired and when he came back into civilian life, he was very frustrated by the quality of stories being told in Hollywood. He felt that the way in which professional men and women, soldiers, were portrayed was inconsistent with what his experience had been. So he wanted to educate civilians as to what it was really like, what it felt like in an honest way. So that's been the whole mission of our company ever since then. So, and especially when you
that's
think of starting
yeah.
out with Platoon, right? So
yeah.
the way in which,
yeah.
Before then, it was the Green Berets. You know, they weren't as honest, and that's why that won four Academy Awards and became the phenomenon it was, because nothing had been done like that before.
Mm-hmm.
So we do it
incredible.
In every media we can possibly do. So there we do radio shows, and we write books, and we've done graphic novels, and we've done film and television, and we've done video games in a way, the best way we know to educate people on what this experience is like. So it's definitely close to our hearts.
It's good that you're setting filmmakers straight as well so that they can get it right. You know,
doing
so
the best
that it
we
can.
Be
more effective, yeah, of course.
Yeah, doing the best we can. I mean, we're military advisors, not dictators, and we still get people who are like, but the stitching in that uniform was incorrect. You know, you control what you can and influence where you can. But, yeah, it's certainly something that has meaning for us, and especially since so many people, you know, it used to be Elvis Presley and Jimmy Stewart, and these actors would serve and then return to acting. And there's less of that now. There's a lot of Hollywood that's separated from that experience, so they don't know. More and more veteran actors are coming along, and they're fabulous, so it is changing to some extent. But so that's why
yeah.
a real fundamental part of what we do is taking the actors into a training situation where they have to live and act as their actors, as their characters would have in the war in question. Because as an actor, you have to have some sort of context. And if you don't,
mm-hmm.
if you don't understand, you're going to repeat the last bad war movie you saw because you think that's right.
Right.
So it's introducing to a world that they just may not be familiar with.
Just for those who are tuning in, I'm talking with Julia Dye, the author of Through My Daughter's Eyes. And I also want to mention that you can find more information about her. I'm I've put the links in the show notes at warriorspublishing.com, and she's on Facebook at Daughter's Eyes. So, and also, of course, you can consult Focus on Women magazine.com. Julia, you also publish. You created a published company as well, a publishing company as well, which I think is, again, as I've said to my listeners throughout these interviews, I've interviewed so many authors who self-publish for lack of the ability and the means and the interest of the big publishers, because it's harder and harder to get published, so they just do it themselves. You have done more than your own book. You've got a whole list of authors on that website. How the hell did you do
that? Yes. Well, we, as I, you know, was talking before, Warriors, Inc. is trying to use whatever means, whatever media is available to help our spread this idea. And so we had written books, others we knew had written books, or some fabulous books that had been out of print that we wanted to see back in print. So we wanted to do more than just publish our own stuff, which we did want to because you make more money that way, but, mm-hmm. and you have more control over the process. But we wanted to do more. We wanted to again, serve both the creators of these creative endeavors to make sure that they were reaching the audience, and also to have the audience be able to access this information and read these books. So it's we created a kind of a hybrid publishing company that is a small boutique publishing firm. So we don't do a lot. We do 3 or 4 books a year. We've got about 30 now. And we try to keep that number small so that we can really focus on having them look beautiful, that the cover art is excellent, that the editing is done well. Mm-hmm. You don't see good editing much anymore, sadly, in books. The beautiful thing about self-publishing is it's the democratization of creativity. That you can, anyone can find a way to get their stuff in print and get it in the hands of writers, which is wonderful. And it also means that there's a whole lot of variety in the quality of publications that are available. So we wanted to make sure we were as close to the top of that as we could be to serve the storytellers as well as the readers. So it's been a real labor of love of mine, and that's I'd spend more time on the publishing side of all of the stuff that we do. And the more I do it, the more I love it. So that's it. We just want to get as much information from the writer to the reader.
I think publishing is hard based on every other interview I've done. And so to get better at it and better at it by publishing not just yours and your husband's works, but a lot of other authors, you probably have it down now. But because that has been a huge, I guess, obstacle for so many of these other authors who just love to write. And you mm-hmm. you have found a really good thing there by founding your own publishing company and continuing to work on that side. So you always have a place for your book. And this is not your first book, I should say.
No, it's not, although it's quite different.
What are you working on now?
What am I working on now? I'm working on a documentary about combat correspondents, which are writers who are writing while they're at war, so kind of meshing the things I love into one piece. We have upcoming films that I can't talk too much about. And, I have written other stuff. My other bigger book is called Backbone, and
right.
It is looking at leadership specifically in the Marine Corps, in the NCO ranks, and how we can apply those lessons to ourselves. Because that's one thing another thing I feel strongly about is small unit leadership. Not the big CEO of a gigantic Fortune 500 company. There's plenty of books about those. I'm talking about all of us are going to be called to lead in our lifetime. We're going to have, whether it's a book club or a school group or a charity drive that you want to start or whatever it is, and sometimes even a family, we're called to have leadership qualities, but we don't teach leadership very well at all. So on one side, you have a kid who's been given the job of assistant manager at Walmart, and it sounds like a joke, and people tease him. At the same token, a kid of that exact same age, we're sending off to war with responsible for the lives of 8 men with $1 million of equipment. We completely trust them to do their job. Well, it's the same kid. So why can the one kid do it and the other one can't? Because one's been taught leadership skills and the other hasn't. We can all learn them at any age, at any time. And once we learn them, we can apply them in so many ways to make the things we want to do successful and to make those goals complete. So that's a subject that I feel real strongly about. So that's called Backbone, and I'm pretty proud of it.
Yeah, I'm going to mention Backbone in our show notes as well so that people can take a look at that if they want to. And it sounds like you have a lot of upcoming projects, which is fantastic. And you are from Texas, and you travel to L.A., where I'm talking with you today. Is that how it works?
Kind of the other way. We've been in L.A. for quite a while because this is where the business is. But we are planning on retiring in Texas. So we have got a house there. Our son and his wife live there, and we go back as often as we can. And it's kind of the slowest move in history, so we just keep spending more and more time there until someday we're just not going to come back, I think is how it's going to work.
I totally understand that. That sounds wonderful. I lived in Texas myself for 2 years in almost kind of the middle of nowhere, and it was really an interesting experience, actually, especially for someone, a Yankee, as they would call me. All right, well, I want to put your websites out there again and tell folks warriorspublishing.com, lots of information there. And also, I noticed that Julia accepts submissions of manuscripts. There is a way to go about it, of course, but that sounds really cool that you're out there even, you know, looking to see what others are able to write and what you're interested in publishing. You can also
absolutely. We want the best.
Book, right, of course. On Facebook at Daughter's Eyes. I really enjoyed through my daughter's eyes, surprised to see, as some of the reviews on Amazon, that it was such an interesting book that was more deeper than you'd expect, and that was like really held our attention because you think, oh, war book, whatever, and it's really not that. So that is real kudos to you, Julia, because you really got people interested and held them.
Thank you. Or Abby did.
Well, somebody created Abby. So I guess, you know, more power to you.
Thank you.
All right. Well, you and your husband and your publishing, have you ever thought about possibly teaching writing, teaching classes on writing, on military writing and things like that?
I would love to. I love to teach. I have a PhD in military history anthropology, which is kind of a goofy thing, and people were saying, well, what are you going to do with that? And of course, you go for that with the idea that you teach someday. But my thought was, while I was young and healthy, I would want to do these very physically active things that I could then later in life, when I wanted to slow down, start teaching. And I am slowing down. So that time is getting closer.
I can't imagine.
So it's becoming more and more appealing.
I hardly believe that you are possibly slowing down because you have such a full plate. And you're a wonderful role model for women as well, because I'm a big promoter of women, as I've said on this show many times. And I love to see women own businesses and women starting things and entrepreneurs, mompreneurs and things like that. So I think that is huge. So I doubt that you're really slowing down, Julia.
Well, thank you. Well, but teaching is looking more and more appealing, and I'd love to do it. So I'm happy to down the road if the opportunity arises.
Wonderful. All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. I've been speaking with Julia Dye. She is the author of, well, we mentioned Backbone, a previous book she wrote, and she wrote also Through My Daughter's Eyes, which is the one we mostly talked about today. And she's a very busy lady. She has a publishing company. I should also mention that, Julia, you won a gold medal from the Military Writers Society of America, which is quite a feather in your cap. So congratulations on that. And there's more links in the show notes, everybody. Thank you so much for listening today. Julia, thank you so much for taking the time. And I am Karen Allen, and we will talk at you and listen to you next time on Left Em to Prose. Take care, everybody. Bye-bye.